You're listening to Games of Future Past on the Fat Gatsby Network.
Go.
All right.
Welcome to Games of Future Past. This is Tim.
I'm Dave.
That's Dave.
Yep. That's us. We're each other. And so
we got something interesting this week.
Yeah, this hopefully. Episode, well, I hope so. I think so. This is kind of a major life event for me. This past weekend, I took a lot of a sizable chunk of my retro video game collection and sold it to a used video game shop.
Now, what was included in this?
So much. My God. Okay. What I thought was going to be the crown jewel of this collection mm-hmm. was an Atari 800 XL in its original box mm-hmm. with the optional audio cassette data recording device that you could plug into it as like a disk drive mm-hmm. also in its original box. It was in great condition. I know that I had used it at least a couple times to play some of my old Atari 400 carts, which was the first video game console my family owned. Mm-hmm. It's where I played Mountain King. Yay, Mountain King, which I also sold and which nabbed $5.50. I was surprised.
Mountain King did?
Mountain King for the Atari 400/800. Yeah. Weird. Anyway, so I traded, I brought my Master System collection, which I began collecting when I was 10 or 11.
I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. I got rid of my Game Gear and all my Game Gear games.
Oh man. I was looking into getting a Game Gear.
You
at
were
at some point just because well, they're so stupidly cheap. It's not hard to attain one if you want to have a Game Gear in your life.
Yeah. I had a library of Atari 2600 games and two 7800s that I inherited from my college roommate's family's basement back in college. And I've been carrying around with me ever since. I had an extra Super NES. I had an extra GameCube. I had an extra Sega Saturn. I had the PS1, the slim designed PSX that had an optional flip top LCD screen.
You got rid of that?
I got rid of that. Huh. I know. And
you love small consoles.
I know. I adore it. The reason I got rid of all this stuff is because it has been.
Was this all hardware? Or was there like a number of games for those systems other than like the Atari and Game Gear shit?
Not really. No,
no.
I kept most of my PSX games, my Super NES games. There were a few games here and there that right. where I was like, I don't need this. I got rid of my Super Scope 6.
Yeah, get
so
fuck
I
that
also
thing.
Got rid of the Super Scope 6 cartridge and my Sega Menacer. Oh, and I got rid of my Donkey Konga bongos and my copy of Donkey Konga. I got rid of my Taiko Drum Master drums and my copy of that game. I got rid of my Gun Con 2. For PS2 and my copy of Time Crisis 3.
Man.
Because I no longer own a CRT and I do not envision a time in my life when I ever will again. So I've made my peace with that.
Yeah, I got my nice little 24-inch CRT that is going to be adorning the room across the hall. And it's, yeah.
You know, a lot of this stuff was either stuff that I bought on clearance 10 years ago during the last console transition. So I got it for a song.
Is this the kind of thing where Jana's just like, Dave, why do you have all this stupid stuff?
Exactly. It's stuff that I might have played
like,
once.
Do you really need like so many things, Dave?
But she was not the impetus behind this. The impetus was that at the time we are recording this, we are moving. We actually just accepted an offer on our house 2 days ago. Yeah, nice. We're super excited. So we got to get shit out of here. And I going through the dozen or so 20-gallon plastic bins of video game stuff I've got out in my garage, mm-hmm. I isolated like 6 of them and determined that none of this stuff I have not touched. The entire time we've lived in the 7 years we've lived in this house, mm-hmm. I didn't touch it when it was in storage the 2 years before that. If I haven't touched any of this in nearly a decade, I do not want to move it to another house. There's no point. It's senseless. It is hoarding. it was getting to the point where I was feeling like a hoarder and I had to make some rational decisions in my life. Like, what is the experiential value of keeping the video games I want to keep versus keeping this stuff that I'm keeping, like, on the off chance I might want to play it someday? It wasn't worth it.
Yeah, see, I guess I do not have the amount of retro junk lying around that you do.
I think a lot of your stuff is neatly organized. It's out. It's shelved.
I have an Atari. I have a ColecoVision, which I think was yours actually at some point that found its way to me, which I have not taken out of the box that you gave it to me in. So that's a bad thing. most of my systems, my consoles have a place in the house. Mm-hmm. The modern consoles, they live in the living room, and most of the retro consoles are with the aforementioned CRT. Mm-hmm. I have gradually kind of purged my game collection over the years of stuff that, I had, a bad experience, or what I look at upon nowadays is a bad experience trading in some video games. Mm-hmm. When I had that moment when, I'm like, oh man, I want to get some N64 games. So far too many Super Nintendo games were traded in for far too little credit at HORC Hobbies, along with a couple N64 games.
Those were dark days.
And I hate thinking about that day, which is stupid because any of those games of value, which one of the things I traded in was like Earthbound, which will make people cringe, and Secret of Mana, and a number of things. Some of that shit was garbage, and I've never gone out of my way to reattain. Mm-hmm. But pretty, shortly after that, I was just like, why the fuck did I do that? That was totally not worth the stuff we traded in to get, Turok the Dinosaur Hunter and Blast Corps, and also have to give them like $40 for them. It is the worst of not getting enough money for your games, period. And it sucks. I mean, it's what happens when you trade in games, and at the time it seems like a good idea, but in looking back on it now, I'm just like, I should have just kept that shit. I love Blast Corps, but fucking whatever. And I feel like everyone has that moment at some point in their gaming career when they're just like trying to get rid of some old stuff. They're just like, I'm not going to play this stuff anymore. I want new stuff. I want the new hotness. It doesn't matter how much I'm getting for it because I'm not going to play it.
Well, yeah. Well, I think the desire to trade stuff in order to get new stuff is, I don't want to say a dubious reason, because you're never going to get the value that you think you want. I think you need
there are certain instances where one might go to Target and they're having, there are moments when you can take advantage of the system to get the value that your game, your game deserves.
Yes. But it's when you are painfully parting with something, you're not really sure you want to, for the promise of something shiny and new.
And it wasn't even painful at the time. It's just looking back on it, I'm just like, no, that was too much stuff for too little in return. Now that I look at it, and part of that's because cartridge games cost like $70 a piece, and I mean, whatever. I'm having them, but here nor there. That was kind of a big purge, and that was in like '97 or something like that. And then once we hit disposable income years, and we started making routine trips to the old game stores in Rochester, to the Tom's Bargain Shop, flea market, junk shop, buy sell trade in Newark, and just start accruing all of these games, because why the fuck wouldn't I pay $3 or less for any NES cart, or $5 for random Super Nintendo games? Like, I would just pick up any shooter, anything I thought looked neat, and a lot of that stuff is that I bought there was very, very good, like especially in our first few trips when I was picking up just stacks of classics. But sometimes we'd go there and I'd still want to get something, a few games, and why not? And so I just, at some point my NES collection like buoyed out to like 300 some games. I had like 300 NES cartridges.
Good Lord.
And, over the course of, I got a bunch of N64 games, of course, over the course of the years, a bunch of Super Nintendo games, PS1 games. And then, the PS2, you get your PS2 GameCube era, and then into like 360 PS3 era, where, but especially that PS2 GameCube era where I would take advantage of a lot of buy two get ones at GameStop.
Yeah.
And just picking up a lot of games, buying games new. Again, disposable income, had to pick up games as soon as they came out. I was very much about that at the time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'd end up with these games that maybe weren't that great. Maybe I didn't actually ever play that much of, maybe I played a bit of and put them down, or just, especially with the buy two get one, I would buy games and just never get to them sometimes.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Like taking advantage of those sales. It's like, oh my God, it's so cheap. I must find something or a third thing to fill out this with the two games that I actually want. Mm-hmm. And then Guzex, getting games in, getting games, you know, getting rid of games. So over the course of the years, and then since kind of Guzex even petered out, I've done some sales on eBay, a few rounds of just like, you know, I'll comb through, you know, every system and be like, okay, I could get rid of this, this, and this. I'm not going to play this. There's no reason for me to keep this game.
Guzex helped me cull my collection a little bit. Yeah. Actually, at least a dozen games that I traded in this weekend were games for mostly like PS2, Xbox, GameCube that are bona fide hits. They're classics, mm-hmm. but have since been re-released in HD, and I own them mm-hmm. in HD. And so at most places, these older games are worth nothing.
Right.
The older versions. I have an unwrapped copy of Shadow of the Colossus for PS2 mm-hmm. that I was looking to unload because I have a better version of it, and yep. no one wanted it. It wasn't worth anything to anyone, but mm-hmm. it was at this place.
And there was also like, there was a time when like FYEs were going out of business and they were selling Xbox One PS2 games for like 75% off, and holy shit. And there were some random occasions where GameStop was doing buy two, get three free on like old PS2 games, or buy two get two. It was just like ridiculous, and you just accrue discs because it's so cheap, why not?
Yeah, I've got a bunch of GameCube games from GameStop that were free after a coupon.
Yeah, and then at a certain point, you know, I go back through the system, the shelves, and I'm just like, why do I still have this stuff? I got to get rid of some of this. But for the most part, my there is not that much extraneous stuff in this house. There's some, like, we have two Dreamcasts because Lauren also has a Dreamcast, two GameCubes for the same reason. But there isn't like bins upon bins of stuff sitting around either. You know, my shelves are set up. They have their place near the TV they're hooked up to. Mm-hmm. And there's like a couple bins of like random controllers and stuff that just aren't very well sorted, but are quite necessary to have around. So
good.
I don't foresee myself like having to go do a big purge like you did, but you did go do the purge.
I did, and
then you went and talked to the guys, apparently.
Well, okay. So here's what happened.
Talk about your experience a little bit to preface this.
Yeah, I was looking for Game Craze. There was a Game Craze location out in the mall in Syracuse. And I found out that they had closed down about a month ago and they closed down earlier this year. And about a month ago, they were replaced by an independent game store called J Street Games, which up until now has had a few locations in like Albany and Massachusetts, but this is their first location up here in like central/Western New York. And so I called them on the phone and I started running down the type of stuff that I wanted to break in, mm-hmm. that I wanted to bring in, half expecting every time I said something, they would be like, no, we don't take that stuff. No, I'm sorry. Everything, he was like, yeah, that'd be great. That's awesome. Bring it in. They were super excited to see this stuff. And sure enough, I got there when the store opened the next day, and the two employees that went through my stuff, Jay and Jonathan,
of the eponymous street, apparently.
Well, we joke about that in when I talk to him. No, this is not Jay of J Street Gang. He just happens to be named Jay. His name is Jason, and they call him Jay. The store is not named for him.
Yeah.
It's just a coincidence. They're going, first of all, it was a delight to see them go through all my stuff and be like, oh, dude, look at this. This is amazing. Check this out. It was cool to see them get excited about this.
How old are these guys?
20 and 24.
All right.
They were super pumped to see most of this stuff. Mm-hmm.
I wish I'd listened to the interview before we recorded this so I'd make sure not to overlap with things you talked to them about.
There was so much stuff that it literally took them 6 hours to process everything. And so they were just setting it on top of the counter.
Were you just hanging around the store for 6 hours?
Not the whole time. Yeah. At one point they said to me like, dude, if you want to go, if you have other shopping to do, we could give us your phone number and we'll call you back. Mm-hmm. So like me and Jan went out and had lunch and we did some shopping with the baby and whatever. But we were there from 11 in the morning till 5 at night.
Oh my God. That sounds horrible.
I can barely
stand going to the mall for an hour.
Oh, I know.
That's me.
It got a little tiresome, but it was fun to chat with these guys because mm-hmm. there are young guys who seriously are into retro games that were made well before they were born, which I found very interesting.
Hey, we're interested in games that were made before we were born.
Yeah.
I guess that's far less stuff.
We just did
our best of 94 or are doing our best of 94, depending on when this is actually released.
Yeah.
And so they would have been born in 94.
Exactly.
The one guy.
There's a wealth of games that they would never have played. But as customers started to come into the store, they would look at all my stuff and they were picking it up. And some of them were like pointing it out to their kids and being like, oh, there was this one dad showing my PS1 with the LCD screen to his 8-year-old son. Oh,
you had it with the LCD screen?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That was the worst thing you got rid of. You should have kept that. That does not take up a lot of space. And that is a super cool thing.
I got rid of my beautiful Joe bobblehead too.
That's fine. You should not have gotten rid.
I thought you would be mad at that.
No, I broke mine because it's easily breakable. You shouldn't have gotten rid of that fucking PS1 with the screen. That was a dumb thing to do.
I always thought that it was super cool. That was not enough reason to keep it.
No, that's enough reason. The space that thing takes up
doesn't matter,
which is not a lot. You can put it in a drawer. It's fine. It could be used.
Why would I ever keep it for any reason? I have way better ways to play PS1 games portably.
I'm just saying, I don't know. It's so cool.
That's the decision I had to come to essentially is like, is this a thing I'm going to use or is it just a museum piece? And if it's just a museum piece, as cool as I think it is, that's not reason enough for me to keep it. That's where I had to draw a line in the sand.
Shouldn't have got rid of that.
I knew that you were going to have feelings. That's okay.
That thing in particular.
But I was
shouldn't have got rid of that.
I was so delighted by these guys and their attitude and the fact that they wanted almost everything. The only stuff that they didn't take was the stuff that didn't work. Yeah. And the stuff that they literally could not accept. I brought in like action figures that I still had in the box. I had some Deep Space Nine micro machines that I brought in that they took. I had the Worlds of Power NES game novelizations of Metal Gear and Ninja Gaiden. They took those.
Oh man, I never had Metal Gear.
And the stuff that they couldn't, I had a bag full of pre-order swag from GameStop from mm-hmm. 10 years ago, like t-shirts and ball caps. And so the stuff that the store couldn't take, they bought off of me first. They were as delighted to be in the store looking at all my stuff as I was to sell it.
They're going to have this problem in 20 years.
And then at the end of the day, mm-hmm. they paid me $300 in cash.
Nice.
Which I felt was more than I would get anywhere else.
No, yeah, I would have to agree. That is a tidy sum.
They gave me the closest to fair market value I was ever going to come to short of eBay, which would have taken with a lot less work. I was so delighted. I went back to my garage that night, found a couple more games to trade in, the stack of Atari 400 games that I'd forgot to bring in. Mm-hmm. Went back the next day, and they gave me another $44 in store credit, which I promptly spent on a copy of Taito Legends 2 for PS2 with all those fucking shmups on it and the Sega Sonic's Ultimate Genesis collection.
Oh, that's a great collection. My problem is that I have a bunch of old like toys and action figures I need to get rid of.
Yeah, if they are in box, this story.
They're not in box. Well, there's a few things that are in box, but most of it's loose and kind of like all over the place. And it's like, especially because I have so many like god fucking damn Star Wars vehicles.
Oh,
because holy shit, that was I hitting Star Wars hard in my mid-teens and everything that came out. Like I have so much crap, and some of it I'm keeping because some of it's cool, like the cool stuff that, you know. But there's like this large pile of bins that I just gotta get. They gotta go, but
it can feel insurmountable when you don't know who will want this stuff, and you were like, "This has so much value to me. I want it to go somewhere where someone will value it, even if I don't necessarily get a lot of money for it." That's what was important to me, and that's the feeling that I got from this store, is that they valued my stuff as much as I did. So when I went back the next day, I fucking brought a mic and I talked to these guys.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to hear their opinions on retro games. I wanted to talk to them about what it was like to run an indie game shop in 2014 when there are so many other ways to get video games these days, with digital distribution, with ordering, pre-ordering online being so easy and so incentivized with bonuses and stuff. I wanted to hear these young guys who didn't grow up with these games but loved them anyway, and talk to them about what it was like working in a fucking independent game store. This is the record store of our age. And it was a really cool experience. So that is what you will hear next, is my chat with Jay and Matthew of J Street Games in Syracuse, New York. And we're recording. Awesome. Hey, everybody, it's Dave. I am here at the Destiny USA Mall in Syracuse, New York, and I'm at a store called J Street Games. They're new. They just opened here a month ago, and they replaced the Game Craze location that was here for a while. Actually, this whole wing of the mall is new. It's crazy weird. It's like a hotel, but without a thing to go to. Okay, it's a weird, stupid thing, but J Street Games is new around this part of the country. I think the next nearest one is in Albany, but I don't know. We're going to talk about that a little more. I'm here talking to Jay. Jay, how's it going?
Doing pretty good. Dave, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. Now, when you first told me your name, I knew that this was a brand new store, and it was called J Street Games. You told me your name was Jay, and I'm like, this is not the founder of J Street Games, because they're not based around here. It was purely a happy coincidence. But do people ask you that? Like, whoa, are you Jay?
I get that often, man. It's really weird. Like, are you the owner? Nah, I want to say yes, but honestly, no.
So yesterday, 2 days ago, I called you up. I ran down a list of a lot of my classic retro game stuff that I had decided, come to a long, hard decision that I needed to part with. And you guys seem to be really interested. I was really happy that you guys were interested in a lot of the stuff I had to get rid of, because it's not the kind of stuff GameStop would take, obviously, and even I think Game Craze would probably pass on a lot of this stuff. I came in yesterday. It took you guys how long to go through everything?
I don't know. I took you in about 5 minutes before 11 when I opened. We got done probably 20 minutes after 5 in the afternoon.
Yeah, it was a lot. So like 6 hours. All right, 6 hours worth of merchandise. Be honest with me. How much of a pain was it to do?
Honestly, it was a little tedious, but it's not something that I had any kind of issue with. I mean, it's my job, and I love this job, and even the stuff that's tedious, I mean, it's video games. It's what I love to do. Seeing all your old stuff just brought back a lot of memories for me. I started off on retro games when I was a little kid, like 4, 5, 6 years old, so it was just awesome to see some of that stuff, the really rare stuff, too, man. I was surprised you had a lot of that. You don't see that too much.
So we can pause if you need to get the phone. Oh, no, go ahead.
J Street Video Games, Justin Walls. J Street, help
you. So we were talking a little bit about this yesterday. When I asked you if you guys had a PlayStation Vita, I was thinking about trading in all my stuff toward it. So J Street does not carry new systems, and I don't see a lot of new games, right? Talk to me a little bit about J Street's business.
We do a lot of retro games, as far back as you can go. We do a little bit of the new stuff, too. It's just kind of whatever people get in, you know, bring in for pre-owned, mostly. We do carry a little bit of the new stuff, just to kind of keep people happy and just general video game. But most of our business is the old stuff. We also do a little bit of toys and comic books at this location. That's not a J Street. Like, every J Street doesn't do that, but we're trying to do that just to kind of branch out, do something different, and have something to offer for one of our new stores.
I was super excited about that because you even took in my, like, Deep Space Nine micro machines from 20 years ago. That got me. And I thought that that was going to be, like, a stupid thing to bring in, but you already had some over on the wall.
Exactly, we do. I was actually pretty excited to see that one. Star Trek figures and stuff like that, they sell really quick. I was really happy. That beautiful Joe that you brought in, too, I'm considering getting that one for myself. That I was pretty excited to see that one.
That I know that was a thing that I knew is desirable on eBay, but it wasn't going for crazy money or anything. So I had no compunction about bringing it to you guys. Although I have a friend who's going to beat me up because I think he really wanted it. My co-host on this podcast, actually, is going to be a little mad. I'm going to edit this part out. Yeah, he can just come here, probably get it for a very reasonable price. Something I wanted to ask you is, you talked about the kind of stuff, the kind of merchandise that J Street deals in. You and I are both GameStop, former GameStop employees. I'm not here to rag on GameStop. They serve a purpose in the marketplace, obviously. They have their place. What's the biggest difference in your mind between working at an independent game shop and working for a larger corporation like GameStop?
Mostly just the kind of people that you see. I mean, a gamer's a gamer. But the people who play the classic games, I think have a little bit more respect for video games as not only just like a game, but more for the art, more for the history of the gaming and as a culture. Because, I mean, it started with the old stuff. It started with the Mario and the Pac-Man and all that. And you couldn't have Destiny and all these new games that they're coming out with and the systems if it wasn't for the NES, the Atari, and the people who made these brilliant games, Mario, Sonic, Legend of Zelda. You couldn't have the new ones without the old stuff. And I think that it's just, you see a lot more culture in the old stuff. The new stuff, you just get, oh, I'm just looking for this new game to pass some time. It may or may not be cool. Art style's really cool, but the old stuff, way more challenging games. I put more time onto my old stuff than I do on the new ones. And there's just so much more of it out there. It's just so much more fun for me, and I think it is for a lot of other people, too.
You know, that leads me into something else I wanted to ask you about. Yesterday, when Jonathan was helping me get stuff back down to my car, I casually asked him, I asked him how old he was. He said, he's 24, and he told me that you were, can I say it on the podcast?
Go for
it. 19 years old.
I'm actually 20. Okay. I'm actually 20. My birthday was actually on October 2nd. So
okay, that's fair. You're not that young then. So you are younger than a lot of people, frankly, that I think play a lot of these retro games. And younger people that I've talked to, people in their early 20s who started, the earliest games they played were polygonal. They were 3D games. They were PlayStation and Saturn and N64. That's what they grew up with. So I'm always curious to ask people of that age group and younger who are interested in retro games, what was it that got you started playing these older games, and what is it that attracts you? I mean, you already explained a bit of that just now, but what was it that got you started playing older games?
Well, my first video game was for my fourth birthday. I got a Game Boy Color and a copy of Pokemon Gold. My parents got it for me. Just, it was a popular thing at the time. Didn't even know if I would like it yet. They really thought that I would like it. My dad had a classic NES that he played a lot, the old Mario, Duck Hunt, Castlevania. They saw that I was into the Pokemon, and it was similar styles at the time. So my dad got me onto the NES not too long afterwards. I started playing Mario Brothers with him. We got into playing Duck Hunt. RoboCop. My first rage was at 7 years old on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles for the NES.
you were like the second person, random person this week who has complained to me about that game. That's hilarious.
It's a good game, don't get me wrong. It's one of those games that, honestly, I kind of like the challenge, and that's the thing, is the old games were actually hard. But it was a hard game, especially at like 6 years old, 7 years old for me.
My brother-in-law just asked me, it came up casually, so when did you start playing video games? Oh, really? When did you stop? And I was like, stop? Why would I stop? And so he starts telling me about all his old favorite games, and he brings up Ninja Turtles. And he's like, Ninja Turtles was the worst. It was so hard. And I'm like, you are not wrong. That's a universally accepted truth. Don't worry. One more thing I wanted to ask you, really, is this day and age, people can reorder and get any new game on Amazon, Best Buy, GameStop. There's incentives, you know, pre-order bonuses, retro games you can find on Craigslist, on eBay, on Amazon to a degree. We live in a, and with digital sales now continually encroaching on brick and mortar stores, what's the place of the modern indie game store? What kind of customers do you typically see coming in here? Is it mostly enthusiasts, or do you get a lot of mom and dad looking for something for their kids? Who do you cater to as an indie brick and mortar store?
I think we cater to everybody, honestly. With a retro game store, you obviously do see a lot more people that are enthusiasts, and like I said, you know, you see more of the people who are into the video games as a culture and an art form as opposed to just a game. You do get the people coming in looking for something older. Sometimes it's a father looking for his son wants a new PlayStation 3 game, and then he gums around and he ends up spending more money because he sees the stuff that he used to have as a kid. Like I tell people, we don't just sell video games, we sell you your childhood back. So I think it kind of tailors to everybody. Somebody came in a couple weeks ago and his son, I think, was about 9 years old. This kid knew more about some of the games than I did. Just because his father still played it and all that. So, you know, we tailor to a little bit of everybody. Not everybody. Cost is an issue, too, especially with the new stuff, like an Xbox, $600, PlayStation 4 still up there in price. A lot of people can't afford that stuff, so they still want to be able to play something not necessarily new in terms of a chronological sense, but new for them, like something different from what they usually play. So we offer that.
I noticed yesterday a customer came in looking for a Mario Paint mouse, and luckily I had just brought mine in. And I noticed when you told her the price, she seemed a little hesitant. And I feel like there are some people who expect, well, I could find this at a thrift store or a garage sale for a couple of bucks, but then there's the counterpart. But or you could go on eBay and Amazon, and people are way overcharging you. Yeah, you could probably find it and have it now, but how beneficial is it for people to be able to come into a store and find what they're looking for at a reasonable price?
I think that's key, and I try and sell a lot of people on that. We try to deter people from the internet, because if you even have the hint that you think something's rare, somebody on, say, eBay will jack up the price as far as they can get it. You know,
that copy
and
it's Pokemon Silver that you were just telling me about.
Oh, exactly. Somebody actually bought it, and I actually just used the same pitch as I did, you know, with you earlier about selling that. When you come here, people like to pay for convenience, and you know, there's the people out there who are going to scam you out of money because they know you like convenience. Here, you get somebody to talk to up in your face, not in a bad way. You get somebody who can, like, show you something. You get to actually handle the console or the game or whatever it may be to see the status of it before you walk away, instead of blindly paying exorbitant amounts of money for something you don't even know is going to work. You could pay for a $100 game and you could get a Polaroid of the game in the mail, and or it could be all keyed up. You never know. Here, we don't take a system unless it's tested on the TV first. Games, quality control, if I wouldn't put it into my own system at home, I'm not going to take it from somebody, and I'm not going to sell something in that condition to somebody else. I would, anything in this store, I would personally put onto my system and use as my own.
Awesome. One last question, completely narcissistic, self-serving question. Of the mountain of stuff I brought in yesterday, what got you the most? What made you the happiest to see?
I'd have to say probably the gun controllers for, like, Time Crisis and the Menacer. Just because, like, I showed John those, and we put them together, and we were going around the store like we were 4 years old, playing with the little guns. It made me so happy. When I was digging through the bins and stuff, being able to, like, put them together and all that, and just relive that part of my childhood because I loved the shooters as a kid. I loved having that little thing. I joined the military, so like I always wanted to do that. I loved playing with the little guns even as a kid. So just bringing me back to that part of my childhood was so awesome. And the looks from people as we were playing with the toy guns, as they were walking by or coming into the store, was just absolutely priceless. I'd have to say that was probably my favorite. There was no downside to everything you brought in, but that was probably top.
I gotta say, spending 6 hours here with you guys yesterday was definitely a huge ego boost for me. J Street Games here at Destiny USA in Syracuse. Thanks again for talking to me, man.
Thank you very much, Dave.
Hey, Matthew, how's it going?
Good, how you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. So something, one of the first things I noticed when I came in here yesterday is this huge mural. Now, there's a big painting in the front window of the cast of Zelda. But up here in the back of the store is like a chronological mural of heroes and heroines of video game history. And I just took a closer look and I noticed it's painted right on the walls. It's not a print. Do you know anything about how that got there?
Oh, I actually saw the guy, the Alec Acevedo, his name right there. I saw him painting them as he was going down the wall, and it's just, I was amazed at, first of all, the detail of the characters there and the fact that we are actually putting it in chronological order, going all the way from Pac-Man all the way up to PS4, Witchblade, and Sackman right up there. It's just something that, like, that was the first thing I saw, too. I mean, I'm a very big on art, and especially video game art.
This is, it's such a really nice touch that gives this store a really particular feeling. And immediately I was like, yeah, I feel at home here. And I can definitely easily part with my stuff here. Oh, yeah.
I would feel safe bringing my retro games here too. Like that right there just sold me on this place.
Can I ask you how old you are?
I'm 21.
21 years old. Okay, you are also younger than most of our listeners probably and our typical target demographic. So can I ask you what retro games you play and what got you into them?
Oh, what got me into retro games was actually Spy Hunter. The Spy Hunter all the way up from the original all the way up to the one where Dwayne Rock Johnson was on. I played all of them, and that's what got me into gaming.
That's a unique pick, I gotta say.
Oh yeah, and then like usually people do the Street Fighter, you know, all the fighting games on the Sega or the Nintendo, but like my first was Spy Hunter because that was the only game my grandmother had. She just let me go and let me play it, and I would just play for hours and hours. And it was,
I think everyone's got that one classic arcade game that for whatever reason they fell in love with, and the Spy Hunter is a great game.
Yeah,
I've never heard anyone say that it's their favorite before, but it's a great game with a great music to it too.
And not a lot of people, like, especially with his popularity now, not a lot of people know Dwayne Rock Johnson was on the most recent Spy Hunter, so like that just blew people's mind. I think that's what actually got my job here. So not a lot of people know that, and I love that.
Yeah, that was an interesting career turn for The Rock. And you said that you're a comic guy too.
Oh yeah, big comic fan. That's what actually another thing I was surprised that we did here at J Street, because a lot of video game stores, a lot of video game people don't realize that a lot of comic book enthusiasts are also gamers. So I mean, that's a perfect thing to have right here. Boom. A bunch of collections, like I said, the Spawn Armageddon series is one of my favorite, and it's sitting right up there on the wall. I'm hoping it's still going to be there when I get my paycheck, so hopefully I can get it. So
now, we happen to be right across the street from a rather sizable comic book shop. Is there any fear of cannibalizing? And there's a GameStop in this store too. So A, do you ever get people like coming from across the hall and being like, I couldn't find what I was looking for over there? Or do you ever get people wandering in thinking like, this isn't GameStop?
Yeah, we've actually, my first day here, we got a bunch of people from Play the Game, Read the Story across the hall coming in, wandering around, like, wow, your guys' collection is incredible. And a lot of people came in here looking for GameStop, thinking we were GameStop, and realizing we have too much of a retro collection to actually be GameStop. Yeah. And that's actually what actually kept them here. We actually sold the other day a couple of very very old retro NHL games that are actually pretty hard to find. NHL 2001, 2002, very hard collection to find. And that's actually sold us on a bunch of people here. Like, they love the fact that we have a bunch of retro games that you wouldn't hear about from GameStop or Game Craze. And that's where I hope that people will love our store, because that's why I'm going to love it.
When I was here yesterday, I saw a couple of people come in and just their faces lit up when they saw something as simple as an original toaster style NES, or I have my little flip screen PlayStation 1, PS1 that I brought in yesterday, and like people were showing their kids and being like, hey, look at this. You won't know what this is, but this is pretty cool. Do you get a lot of people like that coming in who are not necessarily enthusiasts, but they're surprised when they come in here and they're like, oh, wow, I remember all this stuff?
Yeah, we get a lot of people saying, wow, it's like just stepping into my childhood coming into the store. And that's something we really want to captivate on, being this young business. We're trying to compete with GameStop, Game Craze, all these big video game places here. And I think that's what's actually going to give us a foot up. We love hearing people come in and talk about their childhood and what they love to do, what they love to play. And we actually have a lot of the games that they used to play. So we are like, hey, we're just here to help you relive your childhood.
Awesome.
Yeah. I think that it's so cool that you guys are here. I think it's great that J Street is thriving, and it says on J Street's website that you are actively looking for new locations. Is the business based in Albany?
I don't know if the business is based in Albany. I believe it's based in King of Prussia, Pennsylvania.
Okay. Yes, our main store, I believe, is the King of Prussia store in King of Prussia Mall, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Okay, so
this is kind of the only location around here. Is it tough to coordinate with other? You ship in games from other stores. If a customer is looking for something specific, is it tough to coordinate with other stores, or do you kind of feel like a lone outpost, all alone out here?
Not at all, because from what I've heard, the little bit of time I've been here, it's pretty simple to just, you know, if we don't have the game, we can just, hey, mail that here or mail that to this person's house so they can have it. I don't think it's too hard. It's pretty simple of a system.
Cool.
Well, I'm glad you guys are here. I hope that you continue to thrive. Thanks again so much for talking to me, Matthew. It was great talking
to you. Nice
to
meet you.
Okay, this is Dave again. I'm back here with Tim, back in the studio. So thanks for listening to my chat with the guys that work at J Street Games. It was, as I said at the beginning, it was a real pleasure to go to this really cool game store with these guys that seemed really passionate about what they were doing. And, you know, we have a lot of great game stores. I mean, you know, Tim, you and I obviously went to Game Craze. We talk about Game Craze a little bit because our opinion of Game Craze is that they seem to be a bit more focused on just the business.
Yeah.
Being a pawn shop, essentially. but yeah, stores like Oogie Games in Buffalo are really great. I even get a good vibe when I go into Play and Trade in Buffalo. Uh-huh. I think this is a good time for indie used video game stores to exist, especially for a store like J Street, because they don't deal with a lot of new consoles or new games. So they don't have a lot of overhead. They're really just sort of committed to preservation and fair market value for older stuff. It's their bread and butter, literally.
Well, I kind of wonder what happens, you know, as modern games lean more and more towards digital, and you see GameStop branching out and including, you know, taking trade-ins on phones and iPads and shit and selling other things.
By necessity.
By necessity to supplant their business. Like, are we see a situation where that kind of, you know, massive chain store, well, I guess it's really just GameStop at this point in the U.S. since they bought everybody else, where that shrinks away. But, you know, these independent stores that focus on the entire, you know, multi-decade history of video games have more room to thrive as GameStop becomes less relevant, and this becomes the only place to buy physical games at a certain point, perhaps.
Yeah, there was a time when I felt like the hastening of the death of the brick and mortar store could not come fast enough. I was so embittered toward it. But going into a place like this, it gives you that record store vibe. Only these guys weren't snobby and pretentious like your stereotypical record store guy. It was it was the best possible experience of its type. So I was glad to share it with everyone. Thanks for listening.
Cool. And see you guys next time.
Yep. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Games of Future Past on the Fat Gatsby Network.